Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us today. We start with an unforgettable tale set in the wilderness of northern Wisconsin with Wisconsin native David Robleski, who is the author of the best-selling book, The Story of Edgar Sawtelle, which is now out in paperback from Echo HarperCollins Publishers. That's ECCO if you're looking for it. And with a master's degree from the Warren Wilson MFA program for writers, David now lives in Colorado with writer Kimberly McClintock, their dog Lola, their cat Mitsu, and two imaginary goldfish, I'm told. Is that true, David?
Yeah, it's true.
Do you have a goldfish bowl and nothing in it, or do you just imagine the goldfish?
The whole setup's imaginary. We once started talking about having goldfish and decided they were too much work. But if we ever did have some, we knew what we'd name them. So they have a virtual place in our life.
Sounds good. You were born in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, in 1959, as I understand.
That's right.
That's a pivotal year for music and events around the world, so it's no wonder that you were born that year.
Well, you know, I've never thought of it that way.
There is actually a book out.
It wasn't part of my plan.
There's a book out about 1959.
Pardon me?
There is a book that is called 1959, and it portrays that year as the pivotal year.
Ah, I'm not aware of it, but it just made it onto my reading list.
Now, when you were 3 years old, your parents bought a small farm in rural central Wisconsin, determined to try their luck at dairy farming. How did that work out?
It didn't work out great. I think my folks they bought a sort of rundown ramshackle farm. Inherited some equipment with the farm, bought all their livestock, tried it, and ended up auctioning off all the equipment and all the livestock and stopping all in the space of about 18 months.
Hmm.
So it was something that they weren't cut out to do. But they did love living on the land, and we stayed living on the farm. My folks lived on that land for the rest of their lives.
Now, was this around Pittsville or whereabouts?
Yeah, this was just outside Pittsville, about halfway between Pittsville and Marshfield, a little area that was called locally, at least, Cary Bluff.
And with an unused barn on the farm, your mother began to raise dogs, and you became a puppy wrangler, as I understand.
Yeah.
What does a puppy wrangler do, and what kind of dogs were you raising?
Well, a puppy wrangler, I think, is one of those jobs that has its actual work. It involves whatever needs to be done that day. But for me, as a kid, my job was mainly to socialize the pups, and so I was working mainly with the pups, but you know, odd jobs around the kennel all the time.
And the kind of dogs that were being raised on the farm?
Well, over the course of time, the kinds of dogs changed. At first, my folks were raising German Shepherds. And after a few years, they stopped raising German Shepherds. They had been working with another dog breeder, someone that they had essentially been apprenticing with.
Mm-hmm.
And both my parents have passed away, so I can't ask them why they did this, but they stopped working with German Shepherds at one point and started over and began working with poodles at that point.
Hmm.
So in some way, a big change, and in another way, not so much. But those were the two kinds of dogs that we were working with when we were a kid. We had lots of other kinds of dogs around when I was growing up. We ended up with a number of stray dogs that had been dropped off by our house. By people, there were dogs that my folks had had bought just to rescue them.
Mm-hmm.
They thought that they weren't being treated well, and so we ended up having lots of dogs around.
We're talking with David Robleski, who's the author of the best-selling book, The Story of Edgar Sawtelle, which is now out in paperback. It also contains an interview with you as a sort of a bonus for people who would like to get the paperback. And it's a fairly substantial book at over 500 pages. Anyone ever complain to you about how long it was?
I don't get many complaints about how long it was. But how physically big it was in hardcover sometimes was a problem for people if they you know, it wasn't necessarily a great airline carry-on as a book. The paperback is much more manageable.
If you'd like to join the conversation with questions for David about the book or about writing or about his life, then you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Now, you achieved some success in high school with a story about a pack of wolves. Tell me about that.
Well, I don't know that I'd call it success exactly. I wrote exactly one short story when I was in high school. And my entire purpose in doing that was to get off from a day of school to go to the Wisconsin Junior Academy Arts Festival that was held in Wausau.
Uh-huh.
So it achieved its purpose, which was I did get the day off. I got to get on the bus and go up to Wausau instead of going to school for the day. But after that, I wasn't particularly interested in writing. That story, by the way, ended up winning some kind of an award for the best story at that show.
So you did achieve some success.
Well, I guess you could say so. You know, my other goal, of course, was to meet girls. You know, I was 15 years old, so that seemed to me to be the whole point. And since I didn't, I chalked it up as a loss at the time.
Well, then you came to the University of Wisconsin in Madison, correct?
Marshfield, actually.
Oh, at Marshfield. All right. And you tested the waters as an actor.
Yeah, I did. For a brief and inglorious moment, I acted. We did a summer stock of Paint Your Wagon and West Side Story.
Mm-hmm.
And they were great experiences for me. I don't think they were as great experiences for the audience on the receiving end of my performances, but luckily I had bit parts.
Now you
the damage was contained.
You decided that acting was not in your full future, but eventually became a software developer, and that's been your day job up until the story of Edgar Sawtelle.
Yeah. Oh, and not just up until overlapping significantly for many years while I was working as a programmer in research environments and so on. I was also working on this book, so.
The book took years to write?
True, yes.
10 years, perhaps?
Well, it depends on how you measure it. I first started making notes on this story in 1993, and it was published in 2008. So if you want to do the arithmetic that way, you could say 15 years. But really, there were a few years at the beginning where I wasn't sure at all what I was doing. And I was spending most of my time learning the basics of the mechanics of writing, taking short story writing workshops and so on, and returning to the idea for this story over and over, and continually feeling like I'm not a good enough writer to even begin. Although I would write scenes and sometimes chapters, it took 2 or 3 years before I got seriously started on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it takes a couple of years after you basically finished the work, the bulk of the work, to find a publisher, put it through the editorial process, and so on. So I say 10 years as a sort of midpoint figure.
Mm-hmm.
If you really squeezed out all the slack time, we might be able to say 7 years of really sort of focused work.
We're talking with David Wroblewski, who's the author of the best-selling book, The Story of Edgar Sawtelle. Mark Doty wrote, "This remarkable hybrid seems like an impossibility. An American Hamlet, both ghost story and melodrama, a coming-of-age tale, a hymn to the land, and central to it all, some of the best writing about the inner lives of dogs anywhere. The Story of Edgar Sawtelle is a woolly, unlikely, daring book, and wildly satisfying." Very good praise.
Yes, and I'm proud to have it. Mark Doty's a fine writer, and that was very kind of him to write. He has a book of his own about dogs called Dog Years, which is very, very good.
Let's take some phone calls, and we're going to lead off with Donna in Madison. Donna, go ahead.
Good morning. Yes, I had to call because I absolutely love the book. I would get up during the night and read because the story stayed with me. We lived in northern Wisconsin for a while, and I think that drew me to it, and the dogs really drew me to it. We had a Chesapeake Bay Retriever when the kids were growing up. So that part of it I absolutely loved. But I do have to tell you that when I finished the book, I literally threw it down on the sofa and said, oh, my God, he dies. So that was really hard for me to take. But I've gotten over it. I love the story. So I just wanted to pass that on and keep writing. It was a great book.
Okay.
Donna, thanks very much for the call, and I know that David appreciates when someone praises his work. Laurel in Stevens Point, let's give you a chance. Go ahead.
Hi, Dave. This is Laurel from Stevens Point. Bobby,
hi, Laurel.
Buddy. Say, I just, again, tell the audience that it's a wonderful book, and I'm looking forward to your next book. So can you tell us and tell the audience what that particular book is going to be? I hear it's going to be a pre-sequel.
Well, I'm just beginning to work on it now. I've been so busy traveling for the last year or so that I've really not had as much time to work on it as I'd like. But the main character in that book, as I understand it now, is going to be John Sawtelle, Edgar's grandfather. So it will take place in the first half of the 20th century and will entirely precede Edgar's story. I don't think of it as a prequel or anything like that. I think of it as a one of three portraits that I'm trying to write about certain people. Edgar's book is a portrait of Edgar, of course. The next book is a portrait of John. And then the third book is a portrait, although I'm not talking about who that's about yet.
Okay. Well, Laurel, thank you so much for the call.
Okay, well, I greatly appreciate it.
It was nice to hear from you.
Yes, thanks, Dave. Bye-bye.
And if you'd like to join in, we've got some lines open for you. The number is 800-642-1234. Talk with the author of the bestseller, The Story of Edgar Sawtelle, David Robluski. That barn that you did your puppy wrangling in and that the dogs were raised on the farm, in time, that barn is now moved for the story to the Shawamigan National Forest and became the setting for the story. It was that very comfortable for you to go to the Shawamigan? Why didn't you just stay in Pittsville and do it there?
Well, you know, the farm in this book is the most autobiographical part of the book. The land and the farm. This little 90-acre farm is as close to a portrait of the farm I grew up on as I could manage. Right down to the fact that there was a creek that ran across our back property line. The house and the barn are in the same configuration and so on. But for other reasons of the story, I needed their farm, the Sawtelle's farm, to be up north near a wilderness area because at one point in the story, Edgar gets lost on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
He runs off.
Yes.
And I didn't feel like, for my imagination, I didn't feel like central Wisconsin, where I'd grown up, had enough of a wilderness area to support that part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I started taking drives up north and saying, well, would this Shawamigan work? And I remember one day I was driving up Highway 13 and I topped a rise, and down below me I saw the town of Mellon, and in this sort of beautiful little valley. And by the time I'd driven through town, I thought, I think this is the little town that's closest to where they live. And I spent a couple of weeks exploring the area. Living many hours a day in the library in Mellon and reading about the history of Mellon, and by the end of that time I was so taken with the area that I knew that was where the Sawtelles belonged.
David Robluski is the author of The Story of Edgar Sawtelle, now out in paperback from Echo HarperCollins Publishers. It's an unforgettable tale set in the wilderness of northern Wisconsin. We'll take more of your calls. Jim is coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ironically, Larry's Went to his hunting cabin last night for the weekend to do some hunting, which is on the edge of the Shawamigan National Forest. Mm. So there's a pretty good deer hunting up there, I'm told.
Has the season started now?
It will be starting this Saturday. So they have to go up and, you know, get the beer chilled. And
that's right. There's a lot of extensive preparation to have.
Get the food in, get ready for big meals and things like that. Before I go to Jim, let me just ask you this. What inspired the mythology of the Sawtell dogs, who are bred for outstanding qualities of intelligence and empathy rather than because they look a certain way?
This was an experiment in the writing of the book, as was several other elements. Having grown up around dogs and had a lifelong interest in them and dog behavior, I've always wondered why we're so fixated on the way they look instead of the way they behave. So as I began writing the book, I experimented with making the dogs a fictional breed of dog so that people, when they read it, had to construct the dogs for themselves. That in some sense, that was their job, to create the dogs from their imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turned out, that experiment worked. It wasn't central to the idea of the book early on, but as soon as I began showing chapters of the book to people, it was very clear that that was the right way to go. So it was, you know, it was one of those things that developed as the writing went along, and the more it developed, the more interesting it became to me as a premise, and ultimately came to be very central to the story.
Jim in Cumberland, let's go to you. Go ahead.
Sure. I grew up in Pittsburgh and I'd seen David's picture in one of the annuals when he was in elementary school. I read the book. It's fun to have somebody from Pittsville being an author. I had a question that's probably hard to phrase without giving the details, but there's a couple scenes or portions of the book that seem to involve a mystical connection. And I don't know if I was just confused or if there is something in there like that.
I'm not sure I would say mystical. This is kind of a ghost story. So there are ghosts in this book. In fact, there are four of them, although they take various forms, and at first you don't necessarily think of them as ghosts. In writing a story about haunting and about ghosts, there are certain threads that you pick up and you try and run through the story. And you begin to notice, for instance, that in some way we're all haunted by something. Sometimes we're just haunted by where we came from. We're haunted by a place. Sometimes we're haunted by events or things that we've done or things that we've seen. So I know what scenes you're talking about, Jim. They're really meant to be part of the fun of the book for me. I like stories that exceed the bounds of reality. I've always liked stories that have a kind of fantastical element to them. So that was my thinking, at least, when I was doing the writing.
Jim, I don't want to go any further with this because I don't want to give the plot away. As you mentioned, we might have to if we're going to continue that discussion. Is it difficult to talk about the book without giving the plot away, David?
I find that it's simple enough to talk about the ideas behind the story.
Mm-hmm.
I have found it very hard to talk about the story in a lot of detail because fairly early on things start happening that I would like people to discover in the
book itself.
Their reading. It's a crafted and designed experience for people to have. So I often find myself talking about thematic elements rather than plot elements.
Okay. Fredland in Pittsville is next. Hello, go ahead. Fred?
Hello?
Hello?
I'm not Fred, I'm Nettie, but... Nettie Friedland.
Oh, Friedland, all right.
Yeah. So. And several of my kids went to school with David. So
you bet.
I was just talking to my oldest daughter, Helena, last week, and she was saying to me that, didn't I recognize the storekeeper in the book as Evelyn Donegan? And I said, I never give it a thought. But I just want to ask you, was it there some element of Evelyn Donegan on, in the storekeeper in the book?
Oh, no, not. I don't recognize that name, so I'm not sure who she was referring to. No, that she's talking about a character named Ida Payne, who is this spooky kind of witchy character who runs the grocery store at a town in a town called Popcorn Corners, and she was, you know, Ida Payne came purely out of my imagination, as far as I know. If she's drawn on the basis of someone in real life, it was entirely subconscious on my part.
I'll have to tell my daughter that. Know that you said that it wasn't based on Evelyn Donegan.
Yeah.
Because I thought I was going to have to go back and reread the book.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't want to stop you from that, but not because she's Ida Payne is based on anyone in particular. In fact, if Ida's drawn from anything, she's drawn from the witches in Macbeth.
Oh. I recognize that portion of it, but all of our family got the book right away, and we were all reading, you know, because you were from Pittsville, and you know, several, you know, my son John, I don't know if you remember him or not.
Sure.
And Elena, and I think maybe Sarah might even gone to school with you. Uh-huh. And we were all just thrilled that somebody from Pittsville got a book on the bestseller list.
Well, thank you very much. Very nice to hear from you.
We're kind of bummed out on sports. Pittsville never turns out anybody that are good at sports, but we have some wonderful mathematicians and professors and authors and actors and stuff that came from Pittsville, and some of us are real proud of those.
well, I would certainly
luck,
fall in the category of not a great athlete, so I'm glad I could make you proud on some other front.
But a very good writer. Wisconsin native David Wroblewski, the author of the bestseller, The Story of Edgar Sawtelle, now out in paperback. Do you have any idea how many hardbound copies there are in print after such a great year?
You know, I pretty studiously avoid numbers around this book. So I really don't know. Something over a million, I think, but the honest truth is, when I start thinking about numbers and publication and things like that, it all kind of weirds me out. So I avoid that information.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with Margaret and Sun Prairie next. Hello, Margaret. What's on your mind today?
Hi, I'm enjoying this program very much. I love dogs, and my parents met in Pittsville, Wisconsin, about 10 years before you were born. And my father's name was Fredolin. But you mentioned that you had poodles in that you raised later on rather than a German Shepherd. And I raised poodles myself, and I think they're the best-kept secret, especially the standards. For family dogs, I think they're just an absolutely wonderful dog. How much do the poodle, did you have standards, and how much does the poodle personality kind of relate to your character in the book?
We raised mainly miniatures, so not the toys and not the big ones, the standards, but mainly the miniatures. And they are great dogs. We have good friends who have a standard poodle, and she's a great dog. I'm always looking forward to going over to visit them because I get to visit Uda, which is the name of their poodle. I have tried as best I can to make the Sawtelle dogs be a kind of mix of all the qualities that I like out of dogs. And a few qualities that I don't think dogs actually have right now. So I don't tie them in my own mind to any breed of dog that I've that I've known or lived with, even though there have been quite a few. And I thought that that would be hard for me to do early on, and it turned out not to be, that I could hold a kind of imaginative blank spot in the story for them and let them just be what I imagine to be a really great companion, and to have certain qualities without tying it to a breed of dog. And I think if I had tied it to a breed of dog, it would come through. So I'm satisfied for myself that the Sawtelle dogs are distinct from any other breed.
Well, dogs certainly are close to my heart, and I'm really happy to see that something's been written about them. I'll have to go get your book.
Oh, absolutely.
I hope you enjoy it. There are a bunch of really good books out there in the nonfiction world, too, that I recommend on the website for this book, which is www.edgarsawtelle.com. So beyond Edgar's story, there are many other books to read, too.
I like remarks by Mark Doty as he puts together what's contained in this book. You have an American Hamlet, you have a ghost story, you have melodrama, a coming-of-age tale with Edgar, Hymn to the Land, and central to it all, some of the best writing about the inner lives of dogs anywhere. It's very odd to be able to hear the thoughts of a dog and understand it, especially if you are a dog owner.
I think that part of the pleasure of living with dogs is doing exactly what you just said, which is to watch them and to wonder again and again, what are they thinking? You know, what do they make of this situation? And to go through that exercise, to me, that's part and parcel of the experience.
There's always the reference to Hamlet. In any review of your book, there's a reference as the plot model. Did you follow that plot, or did you let the story just wander in the direction it was going to go?
Yeah, Hamlet comes up pretty early and often in reviews of the book. It's all surprising to me that The Jungle Book and Mowgli doesn't come up equally often,
mm-hmm.
Because I think that those are the two fictional characters that have some influence on Edgar's story. And I think of their influence as being approximately equal. And my rule when I was writing was that I would hold those two characters in my mind as I went forward, and that those stories were free to influence Edgar's story or not, as it made sense for Edgar's story. And so at points, Edgar's story rendezvous with Mowgli's story. In fact, Edgar's story is very much like Mowgli's story turned upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And at points, it intersects with Hamlet's story. But Edgar himself would say Mowgli is the character that he identifies most with.
Right.
And in fact, at one point in the story, Edgar's job being to name the pups, he finally names himself. And he gives himself Mowgli's human name, which was Nathu.
He has a very interesting way of naming his dogs.
Right. He has a dictionary that, from the time he was an infant, he would page through and choose words to be the names of the dogs. And every time he names a dog, he also makes a note in the margin next to that word saying it was this dog that had this. This word as its name. And so as he's grown up, he can now go back through this dictionary and page through it. And it's sort of like a history of all the dogs he's ever known, but cross-indexed against words in the dictionary.
All right, to the phones again, and Donna in Arcadia is next. Hello, Donna.
Hello. Thanks.
Yes.
Well, I'm another raving fan. I just have to tell you that I loved the book. I read it about a year ago. I read a good review of it, and I went out right away and bought it, thought, well, this sounds like something I'd like. And then it sat on my nightstand for almost a month because I thought, I don't know if I'm up for a heartwarming tale from the Midwest, too much Garrison Keillor or something.
Uh-huh.
So, but obviously, from the very first paragraph, it just grabbed me. I couldn't put it down. And my husband and I normally read the same books, and he was a bit behind me. He's busier than I am. And I read the book straight through, and I just kept saying, put down whatever else you're reading. You have to read this one. And finally, he got around to it. He loved it. And as soon as I finished the book, I thought, I'll never read anything this good again. And I immediately read it again.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, I haven't read a book like that since I was a kid. And every once in a while, still, I'll go over a couple of the Almandine chapters. And I'm a dog lover, and something that you wrote about Almandine sort of thinking about the unknowables in the world of humans, azimuths and longitudes, secants and triangulations. That phrase keeps going over and over in my head when I think about my dogs and what they might or might not be thinking about us.
Well, that's very nice to hear. Thank you so much for your kind words. You know, I think the dream of every writer is that there are some people out there for whom their story is going to be a bullseye. And you know that everybody, you know that if enough people read a book, there's going to be the whole spectrum of experiences. It's not going to be central for some people, but you hope that there's a few people that it registers on centrally the way you described that. So thanks very much for calling in and saying that. It's wonderful to hear.
Donna, thank you very much for the call, and we've got a couple of lines open for you at 1-800-642-1234 as we talk with David Wroblewski, the author of the bestseller, The Story of Edgar Sawtelle. It's now out in paperback from Echo HarperCollins Publishers. David now lives in Colorado and writes there, but if you've been following his website at all, you'll know that he's been on the road for the last year, and basically you just got off the road, didn't you?
Yeah, I just got home last night at around 10 o'clock at night, so this is my first day back in where I actually live in close to a month.
So we're happy to have you home, and hope you had a good trip. I recall when Lonesome Dove came out, I just loved that story. And up until your book, I had thought that was my favorite story.
It is a great novel, isn't it?
It is.
I love it, too.
But the story of Edgar Sawtelle has got dimensions that doesn't have that makes it equally compelling and enjoyable for me. I know that Stephen King gave you some great praise, flat out loved the story of Edgar Sawtelle. In the end, this isn't a novel about dogs or Heartland America. It's a novel about the human heart and the mysteries that live there, understood but impossible to articulate. I don't reread many books because life is too short. I will be rereading this. Stephen King.
What a generous thing for him to have said, huh?
How did you happen to... You had not met him, I believe, before he saw some of this writing.
No, and, you know, this is something that I sometimes explain to people about what an act of generosity it is for writers to send endorsements of books for unknown writers. You know that he probably gets bombarded with the manuscripts of lots of books. By agents and editors and so on, asking him to read them. And, you know, writers read with a certain agenda in their head. You know, they're generally reading to serve whatever book that they're doing. So for him to take this book that, you know, long before it was neatly packaged as it looks for us now on the bookshelf, and to read it and say such kind things, was a real leap of faith on his part. I'm sure he has a giant stack of books. So I'm still. It takes my breath away to hear that he read it and he was willing to sort of step forward and say, "You never heard of this guy, but I like his book."
It's certainly remarkable to have Stephen King cheerleading your book, and I can understand why he does it and appreciate his sentiments about it. Let's give Judy a chance in Grand Marsh. Hi, Judy.
Hello. I, too, am a big fan of the book. It was fabulous, and I've been trying not to really reveal too much of the story, so this will be a subtle way to put this. Could I commission you to write an alternative ending for the emotion that I experienced, not endured, I'll use a different word, not as revealing, that I experienced at the end of the book that would have an alternative for a fairly large group of people who felt the same way, which I'm not going to reveal how I felt at the end of the book.
I guess it's safe to say you were disappointed.
No, you're not supposed to say that.
All right. Well, I know that the readers probably, they're critical at times, and often I do see in the reviews comments about the ending of the book. What are your thoughts today?
My thoughts are this story has always had the shape that it's had, my actual response to questions like that is you should go back and reread the story because it it has the shape that it has for a reason, and from my point of view, having worked on this story for a long time, there was only one way to make the story whole. And that is the way it stands right now. It was the subject of a lot of thought and a lot of consideration. Certainly was not done in an offhand manner. So I understand that the ending is not is challenging for people.
Mm-hmm.
But I absolutely believe it's the right ending.
Judy, thank you very much for the call, and we're going to give Peggy the last word here before we close off. Go ahead, Peggy.
Okay. I understand that everybody, for the last caller, everybody dies in the end of Hamlet. So I just throwing that in. I wanted to tell you that Edgar's silence really resonates with parents of autistic children.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you, it's something that I've noticed from talking to people.
Yes, and occasionally when I'm doing readings, someone who's a parent of an autistic child will come up and say something along those lines. I early on in the writing of the book, I briefly considered exploring autism as a reason for Edgar's muteness. But I felt that, in fact, he wasn't autistic and that it would be a disservice to sort of go down that line. But I understand that that autism is often manifest as a certain kind of relationship to language or avoidance of language. So I've heard this comment many times, and it makes me happy to hear it. But I also try to make the distinction that Edgar isn't autistic and is not meant to be a portrait in any way of autism.
And Peggy, thank you so much for the call. I'm sorry we can't get to more calls, but we're out of time and David's got to go back to work. Do you have a deadline for this next novel of yours?
Yeah, it's out there a ways, though. I'm not too worried about deadlines at this point.
Well, we certainly hope we'll get a chance to talk with you again when it comes out.
All right. Thanks very much.
David Wroblewski, the author of the bestseller, The Story of Edgar Sawtelle, now out in paperback from Echo HarperCollins Publishers. It is a great book. I tried to read it to my Boston Terriers, but they didn't appear to understand it, so we'll have to leave it there. We're going to continue to talk about dogs. We've got Kenny Solway coming up in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.